Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche. Auch bei den Johnsons. Oder, Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau. Made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Stu does America.
We've got a hot new merch item available for you. Yeah, for the election. It's Joe Biden, elderly man with a poor memory. The whole line, t-shirts, mugs, is all available at stewdoesmerch.com. The code is Stu10. You'll save 10%. Also, we have a completely ridiculous video up on our YouTube page. You know, you've been hearing about Ozempic and all these other weight loss strategies. What about Meditatch Industries? Haven't heard about them at all, and I want to make sure you do. YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Go there, subscribe if you dare. Eric July is here to tell us how he's shaking up the world of comic books. The left is losing their minds over something Trump said, so, you know, it's a day that ends in Y, but we'll go through that. We're going to start, though, by doing the COVID vindication. And I want to be clear here. You may feel vindicated over the things that you believed about COVID, and rightly so, probably a long time ago. But this isn't that story. This isn't The Blaze telling you they found some data that supports your opinion. This isn't, Breitbart or Daily Wire or National Review telling you, hey, look at this data. This is it goes against the mainstream narrative. What I'm about to go through with you now is from the New York Times. The New York Times, not necessarily known as a conservative bastion of analysis, but they went through the COVID data as it goes back, especially as it applies to kids in school. And I find it to be fascinating that this is where we are, because it's important, and it's important to highlight when mainstream media sources do this. So hopefully maybe they do a little bit more of it. But also just to note that we note these things now so that they don't happen again. It's important that we all kind of realize the mistakes that were made, because it's not without possibility that we faced similar types of challenges, whether it's related to another pandemic or a war or a terrorist attack or God knows what we're going to be facing in the future. The story is this from the New York Times, what the data says about pandemic school closures 4 years later. 4 years ago. Do you believe that? It was four freaking years ago. In some ways, it feels like it was just yesterday. I mean, I still have down here, just in case I ever need it, my masks. You know, my masks all, this is my Anthony Fauci 943 mask. You got to put it on like this. Make sure you're really protected against COVID, because you never know. You can never have too many masks to protect yourself against COVID. You know, it's been sitting down there for 4 years now since we originally made it. And let's get that hair looking right. And it's fascinating that, like, that feels like 100 years ago to me at times. Like, every once in a while you have that moment that kind of takes you back to the worst parts of the pandemic when everybody was home in March 2020, about 4 years ago right now. Everybody was home. I mean, this was not a conservative or liberal thing. You were home in almost all circumstances. They kept having me come back and do this stupid show every day because they didn't care about my life. But everyone else, for the most part, was home, unless you were in some, you know, really critical industry like, you know, the medical field. Well, we all kind of remember this as we go back and trying to recreate it in our heads. At times, we remember things incorrectly. Like, to me, like, basically, my kids went on spring break and they never went back to school that year. And then they went back to school the next year as normal. That was the experience I had here at a private school in Texas. And that's just, you know, the way that we went about it. And I knew it was different in other parts of the country, but the New York Times highlights how much different it was. Here's the chart they show. This is just to kind of remind you where things were in schools. Going back to October 2020, you see about 80% of students across the country were still in either hybrid or fully remote situations. Now, where my kids took, and I mean this honestly, this is a sincere statement. When my kids went back to school full time, in-person schooling is not even on this chart. This chart seems to start in September of 2020. My kids went back to school in August of 2020. So I mean, it's not even on the freaking chart. My experience with COVID was completely different than yours, most likely, if you did not live in Texas or Florida or a couple of choice states. But 80% of kids in the beginning of the year in October in 2020 were still in hybrid or fully remote situations. That number, if you go to January 2021, was only down to about 70%. 70% of kids were still doing this. In fact, over half of kids in the country were still fully remote after a slight drop off in November 2020 and before that sort of winter pickup again. That was the Delta? I mean, I'm forgetting now which wave it was. One thing I will point out, and obviously the vaccines, other than Donald Trump these days on the right, no one really says any good things about. I will say, the vaccines, at the very least, even if you think they did nothing wrong or nothing good at all for people, you see the decrease happening for kids being held home around the time the vaccines come out. And whether you think that was just a liberal excuse they invented or you think vaccines are the most wonderful thing in history, it is interesting because those, it did give permission for liberal school districts to let their kids go back to school. And it might say, hey, well, I don't care about liberal school districts. They're dumb. Which is, you know, understandable. A lot of conservative kids go to school in liberal school districts. And honestly, like, just because the liberal parents are annoying, their kids should still get opportunities to go to school. And at the very least, we got that out of that whole situation. So we had that whole decline after in 2021 as kids wind up going back to school. And the New York Times tries to analyze this and walk people through this. Now, this is a lot of stuff you've heard before. I'll be honest with you. You've heard this stuff before. You know this stuff probably pretty well. But the fact, I'm not even covering the data. What I'm covering here is the New York Times making a big deal out of this data. And it is important. Remote learning was a key driver of academic declines during the pandemic, research shows, a finding that held true across all income levels. At the state level, more time spent in remote or hybrid instruction in the 2021 school year was associated with larger drops in test scores. This seems obvious, but they're making this point very much for the first time for a lot of people reading it from the New York Times. At the school district level, that finding also holds, according to an analysis of test scores from third to eighth grade in thousands of U.S. districts. Here's the chart that shows it, and you see a pretty much straight line here. If you were held out of school, you have much worse results. If you were mostly in person, you have much better results. Now, of course, COVID, just as a thing, certainly held pretty much everyone back from March until I guess it would be May or June, depending on when your school lets out. So everyone missed some school. It affected everybody negatively. Obviously not a positive time for kids to necessarily have to go through. So everybody lost a little bit of learning, but much, much worse, about doubly as bad for kids who were held held hostage, let's be honest with it, by teachers' unions. When teachers' unions got involved, kids' situations got much, much worse. I would argue this is true all the time, but it's certainly true through the COVID period. In districts where students spent most of the 2021 school year learning remotely, they felt more than a half a grade behind in math on average, while in districts that spent most of the year in person, they lost just over a third of a grade. The most recent test scores from spring 2023 show that students overall are not caught up from their pandemic losses, with larger gaps remaining among students that lost the most time or ground to begin with. Students in districts with remote or hybrid the longest, at least 90% of the 2021 school year, what a travesty, still had almost double the ground to make up compared with students in districts that allowed students back for most of the year. I mean, they were 90% of the 2021 school year. What, that goes to June of 2021? They were still in hybrid situations? Yes, unfortunately, that is true. Even the poorest communities, this is fascinating, even the poorest communities, which usually perform worse than the wealthiest communities, this is a known fact, but why, not necessarily through COVID, look at this. If you happen to be in the poorest district, you actually performed better, if you were mostly in person, than the richest districts did if they were held in hybrid or remote situations. This is very much a reverse of long-standing educational data. Usually, when you have rich districts, they have better facilities, they might have better teachers, parents might be more focused on what their kid is learning rather than, let's say, surviving from day to day. So those things were reversed because of this policy. It's important to understand how destructive this was. It overturned hundreds of years of patterns in education just because what the media was telling you at the time. This is the right thing to do. If you don't want to do this, you're killing grandma. Well, all that has been shown, and you know this, but I'm telling you that the New York Times now knows it too. All this has been shown to be absolutely crazy. Let me give you their summary. This, again, is from the freaking New York Times. I'm reading this. Today, there is broad acknowledgement among many public health and education experts that extended school closures did not significantly stop the spread of COVID, while the academic harms for children have been large and long-lasting. And that's what's interesting here. They're not just saying, hey, this hurt kids, which, you know, maybe you can make an argument it was worth hurting kids in a certain circumstance. Okay, well, it's so bad for everyone, so bad. The kids could die, grandmas could die. We have to hold these kids out even though we know it's going to harm them. But that's not what they're saying. They're saying even though they kept kids out, it didn't even help with COVID. You knew that already. I knew that already. The New York Times now knows it too. Perhaps the biggest question was that hung over school reopenings, was it safe? Infectious disease leaders have generally agreed that school closures were not an important strategy in stemming the spread of COVID. No way, said Dr. Gene Noble, who directed the COVID response at the University of California San Francisco Health System. Again, that's not some conservative doctor. You're not hearing from some guy that you've heard on The Blaze 55 times. These are people who are in the mainstream. And the fact that they're now acknowledging, like, oh, yeah, well, everyone knows that. It's kind of fascinating. And it might seem like they're just now reverting because, okay, we've gone through 4 years of this. Now it's unpopular to keep kids out of school. So now they're acknowledging it. But that's not even exactly right either. And I've brought this up before, and I'm always fascinated going back to visit this. This is back from, I don't remember the date. It was early March 2020. And this is Michael Osterholm. He is on the Joe Rogan show talking about COVID and how this looks pretty scary. It was late February, early March, right around there. And this looks pretty scary. What's going on? Joe Rogan's asking like his normal guy questions. What the hell is this? Well, you know, what's going on here? And Michael Osterholm, just so you know, he's a guy who went on to be a Biden COVID advisor. He is not some right winger. He is a, you know, if anything, he was connected to Joe Biden, served in the Biden administration at some sort of level as a COVID advisor. And this is him before COVID hits. This is before shutdowns. I remember being out listening to this. There were people around. The crowds were a little lighter than normal. It was at that point where people were kind of be like, I don't think I'm going to go out for a few days just to see what's going on here. This, but before the shutdowns had taken place, here's Osterholm on Joe Rogan's show. It's an extended clip, and I want you to hear all of it because the school closure stuff was kind of known even back then. Watch.
As far as what can public health do, we can talk about this. We're not going to have a vaccine anytime soon. That's happy talk. We can close schools. One of the big challenges we have right now, if we close schools, what do we accomplish? In influenza virus, we close schools during outbreaks because it turns out kids get infected in school and they're like little virus reactors. You know, they come home and they transmit it to mom and dad and brothers and sisters. And so we close schools sometimes. Christmas breaks are always great for kind of putting the dampening effect on flu. In this case, kids are not getting sick very often at all, which is one of the really good news features of this disease. In China, only 2.1% of the cases were under 19 years of age.
And why is that?
You know, we don't completely know. And I'm going to come to that in a second because they're getting infected, it turns out. One study showed that they still get infected with the virus, but they don't get sick. And we have that happen. There's a disease called infectious hepatitis, hepatitis A, where we have outbreaks in daycares. And the way we know we have an outbreak is because it's transmitted through the stool, fecal oral, is mom and dad and the daycare providers all get sick. And the kids, those symptoms, we go in and test the kids, they're all positive. So some diseases will manifest primarily when you're an adult, but not as a child. This one appears to be the same. So do we close schools or not, if we're not really spreading the disease? Because it turns out that if we close schools, a recent study done showed that 38% of nurses today in this country who are working in the medical care area have kids in school. And if suddenly we're closing schools for 2 or 3 months, who's going to take care of those kids? 1/4 of the American population has no sick leave. If we close schools, they don't get paid if they have to stay home. So when you ask what can we do, we have to really be thoughtful about what we do. Are we doing more harm than good by closing schools, for example, even though everybody will say, oh, we got to do everything we can? Or do we just tell people, you know, it's going to be limiting your contact as much as you can, and that's really about what we can do?
Yeah, that's kind of what we were all saying from the very beginning, right? Like, you take the precautions you need to for your family, but these policies should not be like this. And, you know, it's funny, why do we care about this? What's the point? Well, I think bigger than any of the arguments I've made today, I don't care how dumb kids get, much bigger than any of those arguments are personal liberty arguments against what happened during COVID-19. They trump all of this. I don't care if it was wonderful for kids to stay home. It trumps all of this. That's my view. But what is the real problem with this? Well, the problem is not like, oh, we want to punish our enemies or we want to get back at people or whatever. Obviously, you know, that's, you know, there's of course part of that if people committed crimes or whatever, just like any situation. But like looking at this and saying, wait a minute, how do we do this better next time? Story at Axios today, COVID backlash could leave the U.S. less ready for the next pandemic. And look, another pandemic can happen. It's possible. It could be something else, though, too. And everyone now is completely skeptical of any of the advice they get about anything. I mean, there are just large sections of our population at this point that are just becoming anti-new medicines, which I don't think is a generally speaking good thing for society. That doesn't mean that there aren't questions. And of course, you always have the personal liberty to choose what you want to take and what not to take. But man, it's a fascinating time. And if you have a situation where the next time there's a tragedy or a pandemic or a breakout or whatever, people don't want to listen, well, that's not good, especially if next time they're actually handling this well. So my advice there is don't screw up. Like, that's a good way to make people listen to you. Don't constantly screw up. They are going to do everything they can to try to rewrite history on this. We can't forget about it. We can't let them forget about it. But I want to just focus on one more thing here, because the same people who were telling you, hey, you know what? You got to keep your kids home. The teachers need to be safe. We need to redo all the schools before any of them get back into business. The teachers' unions, all those people, all their allies, many of the people in the media, all those people that were telling you that back in 2020 are the same people telling you now that school choice is really bad, that you shouldn't be able to make choices on your own school. You shouldn't be able to send your kids to private school. You should need to pay twice for that. You shouldn't be homeschooling. You shouldn't do any of those things. The same people telling you about that stuff back in 2020 are the same people telling you now that you shouldn't have educational freedom for your kids. You probably called BS on them back then, and you continue to call BS on them now, and that's great. But we should remember, and we should make sure the media is held accountable for the same crap they're pulling now that they pulled back in 2020. Call them out from on what they're doing today and call them out on what they did now. The bottom line is we want people to get better at this so society doesn't screw up so much in the future. One way to make sure the screw up is not as impactful is to let people choose for themselves. History, economics, the great works of literature, the meaning of the U.S. Constitution. Did you study any of these things in school? I mean, if you went to some of these schools we were just discussing, probably not. That's why half the people are moving across the country to get away from where they were going to school. Even if you did learn some of that, isn't it time for a refresher? Well, time and technology have changed a lot of things, but they have not changed the basic fundamental truths about the world and our place in it. That's why I love this program that Hillsdale College is offering, more than 40 free online courses in the most important and enduring subjects in history. You're talking about the works of C.S. Lewis, the stories, the book of Genesis, the meaning of the U.S. Constitution, the rise and fall of the Roman Republic, which I'm told men think about every single day, or the history of the ancient Christian church. Hillsdale College's online courses are available for free. These courses are freaking free. What a great, great idea. And what a great time to be alive. The courses are self-paced so that you can start whenever and wherever you want. You can get started today at hillsdale.edu/stu. hillsdale.edu/stu. It's free. It's easy to get started. What a time to be alive. It's hillsdale.edu/stu. It's Hillsdale College.
Für alle ein Fest zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Diese Woche Gourmet-Dessert-Törtchen. 6x30 Gramm für nur 2,89 Euro. Oder Gourmet-Frischkäse-Gipfel. 90 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke viele weitere festliche Angebote. Jetzt bei Aldi Nord. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I'm joined now in studio by Blaze TV contributor Eric July. He is the founder of Ripaverse Comics and host of For Canon's Sake. And his newest book from the Ripaverse is available for pre-order right now. It's Yaira number one. Be sure to visit ripaverse.com/Yaira, Y-A-I-R-A, to lock in your copy. Eric, how's it going, man?
Great, man, it's going great, man. I appreciate you having me back on.
Yeah, this is so cool. You have the new book. You have so much going on right now. We need to get to all of it.
Yeah.
Let's bring people back to the beginning. If they missed the beginning of this story, you just love comic books. You've always been a fan of the genre. You've always been a fan, you know, part of the culture. And you decided to do something about it instead of just complaining about how everyone else had gone crazy.
Yeah, people that have watched me over the years, and my YouTube was full of me just griping and complaining about the current comic book industry. And, you know, I think I come from a different perspective. I have been writing for a while, but more so from the perspective of the actual customer, was more unique that I came from. And I figured, yeah, let's give it a shot. Well, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Invested my own money and launched it. Did I expect to make that $3.7 million that we made on iSum number one? No, I wasn't expecting that. But it's crazy to kind of envision where I'm at right now versus a little bit over a year and a half ago. It's not even been 2 years yet. It's kind of crazy to imagine that. And it's just awesome. I'm blessed to be in this position. I get to wake up and create, and I actually love what it is I'm doing. Met some awesome people in the process, and it just really goes to show the demand for this type of material that's out there.
How would you describe your mission with all this?
Well, you know, I know some people thought that I was going to go into it like, hey, we have this sort of social justice leftism that's plaguing the comic book industry, and I was just going to do political stuff that was going to be on the opposite side.
Right.
And I think I let a lot of people down there because it's not that. It's more apolitical than anything. We hire based on merit. Anybody can come work for the company. It's just that we leave all that goofy stuff at the door, right? Our number one thing that we want to do is entertain. That's number one, first and foremost. So anything that gets in the way of that in business, leave it at the door. And I think that's why we've created and kind of cultivated this awesome environment of creatives that actually love what they're doing. And it really shows in their work. But my mission was to give people this sort of really comprehensive universe, right, that people can get in on at the ground level and actually follow it and keep up with it. And again, be entertained without having to worry about, oh, I'm going to open this book up and it's going to be beating me over the head with some social justice leftism or something of that nature.
Yeah, I think part of we were talking about this with Boeing earlier today. And it's like, if you go back and watch like advertising from the 80s and 90s, they're always constantly trying to convince you that quality is job one, right? We are intensely focused on every little piece of this car, the aerodynamics, the fuel capacity, the fuel efficiency, every little thing. We thought of the cup holders, and they're like, almost like they present themselves as obsessives over the quality of this product. And now these companies are advertising instead, well, we care about your skin color. We care about your gender. We care about all these other things other than the quality of the product. I mean, it's showing with doors falling off of the planes all the time. But like that's a real change in our culture. And you and a few others are seemingly done something to reverse that a little bit.
Yeah, because all that stuff is superficial to me. It's actually boring to get into all that. Like, hey, I'm going to create something to try to signal to people based on color or even on the political stuff. That's not really anything that I wanted to be involved in with like the Ripaverse. But yeah, that's the stuff that we care about. And this is why I always point to the fact that with the Ripaverse, yeah, the quote unquote wokeness has been a problem that plagued the industry, as I was saying earlier. But really, you combat that by just not doing what it is that they're doing and focusing on the things that actually matter. So with us, story is a big part of it, the universe. And the people that have watched my videos know that I've complained or my gripes went well beyond just, oh, well, they're beating me over the head with some social justice stuff. It was like continuity issues. It was kind of oversaturation problems. Why there's so many spider folk that are all over the place. And there's a million titles that are just spider folks. It's like that's a problem. It's hard to keep up with if you're actually a fan of this material. So I wanted to give something to people that, look, they want a universe to get lost in, and it's easier to keep up with in comparison to maybe the mainstream. So it wasn't it's not an easy thing, because you have to take that into consideration from the get-go, right? All the creatives that are writing books have to be on the same page. We have to know what's happening in the other person's book that's writing it. And that's awesome. That's therapeutic, really, for me in that creative process. But that's where the quality has to shine through. Look, some people are going to like it. Some people are not going to like it. That's inevitable with anything with entertainment. But at minimum, we are trying our best. And I think the audience reaction kind of shows that they appreciate that.
How do you manage all of these different creatives? Because, I mean, when you're talking about, like, creative freedom is incredibly important to any artist, right? Mm-hmm. And you're sitting on top of this, looking at all this, trying to keep everything together. But it's not just you. You're not writing every story. How do you keep all that together?
Well, I think the communication is very key. I've talked to other creatives that, like the Yaira One creatives and Jen and Sylvia Soska, you know, their experience in doing stuff with the mainstream and how that lack of communication just, that's what it was. It was prevalent. They didn't really have a whole sense of direction. The only time they had direction is when something was getting rather shot down. And that's not really how we do things. And it also shows with the people that we bring on, they're professionals. They really want to be here and care about the stories. So before they even write, as an example, with Yaira, Jen and Sylvia and I sat down in a meeting for I couldn't tell you how many hours. Yeah. And they're just documenting this, like, Eric, lay it on us. Like, who is this character? Okay, yeah. I break down everything. They're sitting there taking notes. They're asking the right questions because they're not trying to make this be sort of an embodiment of themselves or their positions. No, they want this to be about the character and have their own kind of spin on it. But it needs to be true and natural to not only the character, but its universe. The same can be said with Chuck Dixon. The same can be said with Mike Barron. They're all professionals. But we meet a lot as well, right? Now, Soskas are brought in kind of more. They do a lot of stuff internally with us, not just with, like, the writing. They help out with the lore and stuff, as well as the editorial stuff. But with the others, we meet all the time. We're sitting down. We're having meetings. I'm getting their ideas. They're getting mine. And we all are on the same page. So I think in order to manage the creatives and have them all on the same page, sure, you also got to set them up for success. That's first and foremost. I all gave them books that make sense for their writing style. But in the same respects, if you just communicate that stuff with them, they're professionals. They know what it is that they're doing.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned the Soska sisters. We have a couple of horror movie nerds who work here. And they, as soon as they heard, they're like, the Soska sisters, like, this is crazy. They're like well-known in this world. Like, and it's interesting that they're coming to a company like yours, right? Like, where you're providing something pretty specific. Why did they want to come work with you? They can work with anybody.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, because, I mean, I found out about them because of their work with, like, Marvel, right? I know they're really known in the horror movie scene. Everybody knows about, like, American Mary and some of the other movies that they've done. But they wrote a Black Widow book that I thought was phenomenal, called No Restraints Play. And it's funny because they kind of snuck it by. It's basically them writing about setting pedophiles on fire. Like, that's really what that's what it's awesome. I'm pretty sure that Marvel, by the second issue, they told me this, was like, we let this sneak by, right? It's too late. They got to commit to finishing out the story. But that blew my mind. I really love that story. It was such a good one. And when I pitched it to them, I had no idea if they were going to accept it. Mm-hmm. But I built that relationship with them because of No Restraints Play. And I loved it. This was before I knew anything about them. And I said, look, I got this universe. I got this character that's right up your alley. I think you're going to really love. And I pitched it to them. And they were like, we're all in. But I think they are comic book. They do the horror stuff. That's their thing. But they love comics, and they're actually into it. They're into the craft and everything that's involved with like writing a book or coming up with conceptualizing a book. So for them, yeah, they get that creative freedom. It's also fun because it's like, this is something that could last for decades, and you're here at the ground level. And I also, you know, there's a lot of financial issues that go on in comics. Everybody knows this, this includes the mainstream. I make sure people get paid, and I make sure they get paid on time and well. Yeah. And that seems to be very attractive to creatives that want to do comic books.
Yeah, I think that's one of the interesting things of watching all of the success you've had with this, is you've been really transparent about the financials. You mentioned $3.7 million. Like, I don't know how much money a Marvel comic makes.
Nobody knows.
But, like, we know how much each one of yours. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, crowdfunding introduced that level of transparency that I really did appreciate. seeing people that were doing the crowd that were on the crowdfunding scene, and I was like, you know what? We can do a version of that. I don't need the crowdfund, but we can do a version of that transparency where people can see the numbers, they can get enthusiastic about everything. It's an entire like literal campaign around it. So for me, I wanted that level of transparency. We haven't seen that like with the books. Like nobody really knows, to your point, how much. Like how much they're actually making from the publication stuff.
Right.
And look, it's not going to make sense for every single book that we release, especially with our schedule picking up. But I wanted people to at least know where I was coming from and how it was really important to have that transparency early on, because I want folks to understand how serious I was taking this. It wasn't a get rich quick scheme. It wasn't something, hey, I made all this money, thanks, I'm going to sit back. I'll get you the book when I feel like it, but I'm going to sit back and kind of kick back, buy a couple Lamborghinis or whatever. That was not the case. I wanted people to see that we're reinvesting back into this company. I am taking this serious. This is my lifelong dream, and I don't believe that I'm perfect by any means. And yeah, I'm going to miss the mark on some things, and people are free to be critical about some of the things that we're going to do. We expect and anticipate that feedback, particularly from our customers, right? But in the same respects, I'm giving it a shot, and people appreciate that. That's one thing we can gripe and complain all day long, but they appreciate a guy that's ambitious or a company that's ambitious and really trying to be a part of the solution. But I think transparency, especially early on, was so vital to people getting on board.
Yeah, I think it's almost like it's become something where it helps you like root along with you. It's like you're part of the team almost. Like you see it, you see these numbers go up. It's like fun to watch your success. It's been great to really watch this go on.
And we've been talking about like getting a running. It's funny. Yesterday we were having a conversation kind of publicly about this because I got some perspective from some guys that are in the content creation space that are fans. Shout out like Az Hill versus Babyface, and he was talking about like I really don't think y'all should stop the campaign thing because. Of the reasons sort of like you mentioned, right? It's like a big event, right? Everybody loves to see the numbers go up, but it's also like a way that people are getting involved in like the fandom, right? Yeah. So it's like, that's feedback that we needed. So it's like, we're trying to come out with this hybrid version of it because maybe the duration of the campaigns are gonna be smaller because we have to move on to the next book and I don't want like 17 campaigns active or anything.
Right, sure.
So we have to pick our spots and when we wanna do it. But yeah, it has a way of like rallying the troops. They really, really like that. Because to be fair, they are part of it. They get to see kind of what their money is going to and how it's impacting the company. And, you know, in this day and age, when people have gotten burned so much by giving money to people that despise them, it makes sense why they will gravitate towards people that are at least being honest. They don't need to know everything top to bottom, but some level of transparency is appreciated.
All right, last one before you leave, Eric. We had the State of the Union last week. It was as good as you could possibly imagine, of course, with Joe Biden. Can you give me a quick State of the Union of American entertainment right now?
Oh, where man. Yes, I guess I could. Entertainment is dead. And I want to be completely honest as far as what I mean by that. Yeah. The mainstream mega corporate way of putting out particular content is gone. I do believe that we are about to get on the other side of this and it's going to look very different. And I'm not sure the people that are a part of the entertainment industries as they exist will have a spot on the other side. A lot of the talented ones will, but it's a lot of fluff out there as well. Particularly in comics, I think it can be said with Hollywood. We may be over this whole, there won't be a new mega corporation that shows up, maybe one that breaks off from another, but like it's a brand new one, probably not gonna happen. I think you're gonna see far more widespread. The market share is gonna be kind of more evenly distributed. Not on like some communist stuff, but I'm just saying it's gonna be smaller entities and some will have more or less success than others. But I think the mega corporate way of trying to produce entertainment is gone. They still haven't adjusted. They don't know how to adjust. Even with something like with news, they are getting absolutely destroyed by people that are shooting videos in their freaking bedrooms, right? Mm-hmm. People would much rather hear what they have to say about entertainement. My buddy Gary, aka people know him as Nerdrotic, just hit 1 million subs today, right? Wow. People, instead of watching The Daily Show or whatever, they much rather watch him, which is why he can easily pull almost 20,000 concurrent viewers that are just watching him. It's new, and I don't think they have the ability to pivot. So the current entertainment industries, as we know it, is going to fundamentally change. And There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be missing out.
And I think that's an optimistic state of
the union. Yes, that's not. Yeah. I don't want people to think that it's like doom and gloom, like I'm black pill. It's the other way around. Mm. Now, more than ever, people are willing to lend their eyes and ears to your material if you are an independent. A lot of it's because they suck. But it's just, they're just willing. Before, decades ago, Riververse, that's an impossible feat. Mm-hmm. The closest thing you had to it is something like Image, but with like Image Comics, that was, again, a coalition of a bunch of creatives that were at the peak of their game at a time. Mm-hmm. But one guy who went from doing like some of the commentary stuff saying, you know what, I'm gonna give it a shot, and then making millions of dollars, that was unheard of and nearly impossible back in the gap. So this is a time to be optimistic, especially if you're wanting to do things independently.
It's an amazing story. Before we leave, and we're way long on time, but this has been great. Have you had any mainstream media people reach out to you and say, I want to write this story? Like, this is an incredible story.
No. The ones that have reached, no, not, I wouldn't even say they've reached out to me. The people that have covered us, especially like the bigger comic book publications, it's been hit pieces. It's been hit pieces, and I know one of the bigger ones, they kind of have instruction from the editorial to not cover us specifically. In any other sense, this would be the biggest story in independent comics right now. I mean, we have $4 million campaigns back to back to back to back in a year and a half.
Okay? That's insane.
So that's something I like to think is worth saying something about. But nah, they don't show us any love, and I'm okay with that. It goes to show that they don't have as much impact as they had before.
That's it. Amen. All right, Eric July, founder of Riververse Comics. Be sure to pre-order the newest book from Riververse. It is Yaira number 1. You can lock in your copy today at riververse.com/Yaira. Please do that. Eric, thanks so much for coming on, man.
I appreciate you having me, man. It's all time.
I mean, it's not as sexy a story as Eric's, but Glenn started realestateagentsitrust.com a while ago. And I mean, in a way, it's kind of a similar story. I mean, he was pissed off at his real estate agents for screwing up all the time. And he's like, how do we do something that's actually better? And honestly, that's how this all started. And it's, you know, it's grown into a big company. Why? Because everyone has that kind of same complaint. We're uneasy about a big purchase like this. It's the biggest transaction you're really ever going to have. So what do? You need someone to help you work through this process. And realestateagentsitrust.com does that. They look through all the agents. They look at their histories, their experience with other customers, and they make it so you don't have to pick out of a phone book or on the internet just some random person. realestateagentsitrust.com does the work for you. It's realestateagentsitrust.com, free service to you. The name kind of says it all. realestateagentsitrust.com.
If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Donald Trump just called for a bloodbath in this country. Did you hear that? I can't believe. Look, I'm not gonna, I could have started the show with this, honestly. I get it's a big story, but like, I can't even bring myself to do it, frankly. It's such an obvious twisting of what he said. We have the full context for you. I'll just give you the full context if you haven't heard it. Did he really want a bloodbath? Because Joe Scarborough is doubling down on this. Does he really want people dead in the streets? Here's the actual context of what he said.
China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're going to build the cars in Mexico and they think that they're going to sell those cars into the United States with no tax at the border. Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us. Now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories.
It would be weird to go into genocide in the middle and hit cars on both sides of the comment. I mean, obviously, he's talking about an economic situation. I could play the montage of everyone using the term bloodbath in a colloquial sense. We've seen that a million times. Every media member has done it. Everyone knows. I don't think it's going to. We're on the verge of a Trump-Bathory 2024 presidential announcement. I don't think that's coming. I think we can all relax a little bit. It's the controversy of the day. Wanted to make sure you had the context of it. But honestly, I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. It's obviously stupid. He's doubling down on it because I know it's uncharacteristic, but Donald Trump is defending his warning for a bloodbath for the country. He says he's only been referring to the auto industry. Any idiot knows that. So I won't waste any more of your time on the topic. I want to talk to you about a great new film called Cabrini. This is something that everyone knows is great. Audiences, critics agree. Cabrini is a must-see. 98% audience score and a 91% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes. It's based on the true story of one woman's fight for the equality, health, and happiness of immigrant orphans. This is from Alejandro Monteverde. He's an award-winning director of Sound of Freedom. It comes from the powerful epic of Francesca Cabrini. This is an Italian immigrant who arrives in New York City in 1889. She's greeted by disease and crime and impoverished children. It sounds totally different than the New York of today, but it was much, much worse back then. And Cabrini set off a daring mission to convince the hostile mayor to secure housing and health care for society's most vulnerable. Everybody agrees on this. Left, right, everybody. Cabrini is a film that all Americans can celebrate and love. It's a New York story, but more importantly, it's an American story, and it's in theaters now. Glenn came to me like 6 months ago. It's like, I saw advance of this. It's incredible. Wait till this thing comes out. It's going to change the world. Well, it is, and you can purchase your tickets in advance online right now. Visit angel.com/stu. It's from Angel Studios, angel.com/stu. The movie is Cabrini. Go see it in theaters or get your tickets online in advance right now. angel.com/stu. All right, I have like four stories I want to get to, and I have 2 minutes to do it, so I'm going to go fast. Putin has extended his rule over Russia, claiming a landslide win after election with no real opposition. He won 87.3% of the vote. What's interesting about this is one of the reasons he won 87.3% of the vote is he got his main opponent thrown off the ballot, so people couldn't vote for him. That's not democracy, Vladimir, and you should know that getting your opponent thrown off the ballot isn't democracy. Just gonna leave that out there. Biden, by the way, holding a narrow lead over Trump in a national survey done by a Democratic super PAC. So whether you take anything from that is notable. I will say the fact that they only have Joe Biden up by 1 point, a Democratic super PAC only has it as a 1 point race, is somewhat notable. By the way, this might be one of the reasons why Biden has become cursing mad over his polling numbers and impatient with staff who try to insulate him from the public. Now, this has been a long known thing about Joe Biden, that he has a real temper behind the scenes. He curses people out. He gets angry. He gets irrational pretty quickly. This goes back many, many, many years. Though I will say it does seem to be getting worse. And this is one of the things, if you've ever had a relative that is, you know, has, you know, suffered from dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever it was, one of the first things you might have noticed was sort of an acting out, a jump to anger in situations where it doesn't really need to apply. I don't know. Could that be some of it? I will say it certainly seems possible right now. And finally, Biden signing an executive order to expand research on women's health. Now, of course, they don't say the word abortion. It's women's health that's important. We don't know exactly what the research is on women's health. It could be really anything, honestly. When it comes to the way they talk about gender, it's either the most important thing or the least important thing. I can never tell which one it is at any given moment. And honestly, like at this point, what is the research that Biden is trying to do on women's health? It could be the long-term research we've needed to answer Matt Walsh's question, which is, what is a woman? Maybe that's what they're researching. And I hope for every woman's sake, they finally figure it out. Texas versus the feds, how the elites use the border crisis against us. Jason Buttrell and Blaze Originals are taking a road trip with the Take Our Border Back convoy. You remember this from a few weeks ago. It's pretty cool, and it's a great documentary. You're going to learn everything behind the scenes that you need to know about the border. Go to blazeoriginals.com. Use the code BORDERCRISIS to get $30 off your Blaze TV subscription. It's available only to Blaze TV subscribers, so subscribe now.